I'm Josh Carey.
And I'm Chef Tom Jackson.
And you're listening to Cooking with Fire.
This week, we're going to be baking bread in a wood-fired oven. And we'll tell you how to set up your grill to do this in case you're like most people and don't have a traditional wood-fired oven at home.
Let's get started.
This is Cooking with Fire, a global exploration of barbecue from KMUW.
Welcome to episode 26 of Cooking with Fire. This is the first episode of a two-parter on bread.
When most people think of cooking on their grill at home, they think of things like steak and burgers, or maybe smoking large cuts of meat like a pork shoulder. But the great thing about your grill is that you can use it like a wood-fired oven and bake amazing breads in it, far better than what you'll find at your everyday grocery store.
Baking homemade bread on the grill is not only fun, but it can elevate your meal to a whole new level. Before we get into our recipe for an Italian-style bigaboule, let's talk a little bit about the history of bread. Bread has been around for roughly 7,000 years. Stone Age humans would gather wild grains while out on the hunt and grind them using rocks. They would then mix a little water and form a kind of gruel. This would give them the nutrients they needed on a sustained hunt and was a quick and easy meal that didn't require much prep.
Now, over time, these men started forming thicker paste from this grain and water mixture and began baking them on flat stones that were heated over a fire. Since there was no leavening, the result was a flat cake-like bread that would be similar to pita or naan.
This bread was not just a great food to feed the hunters while away, but it became a staple of the human diet. Because food would become scarce during the winter, humans began storing grains to make meals during this time and eventually learned that the grains would regrow each season after they had planted them. These nomadic tribes then began to settle down and plant fields of grain. Thus began early civilizations.
Now, bread making didn't really advance for some years, and though there is no doubt that growing and storing grains made recipes more consistent and easy to replicate, all bread was still just a mixture of grain and water that was baked on a hot stone. It wasn't until 3,000 years after the first bread was baked that Egyptians stumbled upon the great things a little yeast can do for your bread.
There is no doubt that the first starter was created by accident. A bowl of water and flour was likely left out too long, and natural yeasts in the air sought out that mixture and began feasting upon the natural sugars. After a few days with daily feeding of flour and water, this mixture turns sour and smells a lot like beer in the early stages of brewing. That's because the yeast is putting off both alcohol and carbon dioxide as a byproduct of eating the sugars.
This is the traditional recipe for a sourdough starter, or levain as some call it, and there are a lot of great things about it. Though there are a couple problems. First, it takes many days to create the starter, which must be fed daily. And second, it has that classic sourdough taste that not everyone loves. Well, thanks to commercially available yeast, we can make a starter the night before that creates bread that has fantastic flavor and texture. Far better than the bread made over just a couple hours in a day, and it doesn't take so much time and energy that it feels like it's too much to tackle at home.
Now is the perfect time to cut to Chef Tom in the All Things Barbecue Teaching Kitchen and get started on our recipe.
Well, I'm here in our teaching kitchen getting ready to prepare our pre-ferment. And the pre-ferment that we're using for this bread today is it's a biga. So this is actually 80% biga. So the majority of the bread that we're going to end up with is coming from this pre-ferment. So what I have scaled is 80% of our flour, the proper amount of water to go with that, which of course you can find in the recipe at kmuw.org. And we're going to add the water to the flour. We also have a very small amount of instant yeast in here as well. And now what I'm going to do is just mix this by hand in a container, in a plastic container. In this case, I've got like a 6-quart bucket. And I just begin to work this with my hands, and what I'm trying to do is wet all of the flour. So I'll use something called the pincher method, where we actually use the finger and the thumb come together to almost pinch the bread, and then as it starts to come together, you can fold it over and continue to do this to work the gluten. And we're just working this until we get all of that flour hydrated for a couple of minutes here. All right, now all of the flour is hydrated. So all I'm going to do, it's 6 p.m. now, I'm going to put the lid on top of it, and I'll come back to it first thing in the morning, probably in about 14 hours.
So there is more than one type of pre-ferment. Can you break that down for us, Tom?
Sure. What we're using here is a biga, which has Italian roots and was used by Italian bakers to replace sourdough, but still allowed them to get big flavor in their bread. And one of the breads that you may be familiar with that uses biga is ciabatta bread. Another popular style of pre-ferment is pulisce, which is a French pre-ferment with Polish roots. It has higher hydration levels, meaning it has close to 1-to-1 water-to-flour ratio, and it's used in popular French breads.
Now let's cut back to Chef Tom as he mixes up our dough.
All right, here we are. It's morning time back in the teaching kitchen, and I'm checking out our biga pre-ferment, and it just smells amazing. It's probably tripled in volume, so it's got all of these air pockets, and the smell coming off of it is just amazing, and that's why we use these pre-ferments. The biga one specifically has Italian heritage. And back in the day, the Italians, once baker's yeast came along, realized they didn't need sourdough anymore. But it turned out their breads didn't taste as good without that sourdough. So they came up with this biga, which you could create the night before to add a lot of flavor to your bread. So that's what we've done here. Now what's going on is I have the rest of our flour, our salt and our yeast here in a 12-quart bucket. I'm just mixing that around. And I've scaled the rest of the water as well. And this is just the 20% portion of the recipe. As I mentioned before, that biga is gonna be 80% of the dough itself. So this water is scaled and is at 105 degrees. I failed to mention last night that when we scaled that water for the biga, it was at a very specific temperature as well. In fact, it was at 80 degrees for the biga. And we use these specific temperatures to activate the process that we need to happen to get to where we want to end up. So we're looking for a fairly specific finishing temperature when the dough is ready to actually proof in its basket. So all of these numbers are going to come together to give us the best possible outcome. And we know that because of the book that we're taking this recipe from, which is Flour, Water, Salt, Yeast. And that's a book written by Ken Forkish, who I worked for out in Portland at Ken's Artisan Bakery. And he's just an incredible bread baker and put together this incredible book that went on to win a James Beard Award for his book. So we know we can trust this source, and we're going to follow these steps as Ken teaches us how to make a fantastic loaf of bread. So what I'm going to do is add this water to the flour, the salt, the yeast, and just begin to mix by hand. I'm just doing this until it's all incorporated, which doesn't take long because there's about as much water as there is flour in this particular instance. And then I'm going to take my biga and add that. So I'm just dipping my hand in water to make sure that it's easier to handle this dough. It doesn't stick as much. I'm gonna get all this biga out of the container. And then, much like we mixed the biga last night, we begin to pinch and fold the dough by hand until it's fully incorporated. And this is going to take just a few minutes to work this all together. All right, I feel confident now that this is all mixed together well. What I'm gonna do is leave it in this 12-quart round container, put a lid on it, and about half an hour, I'm gonna come back and put the first fold on it. So here we are 30 minutes into this dough, kind of doing its initial proof, its bulk ferment stage. And it's kind of spread out, the gluten's relaxed, and I'm gonna give it its first fold now. So what I'll do is I'll start at one edge, lift the dough up and across, and stretch it out while I'm doing that, and then place it back down. And I'll rotate the bucket a quarter turn and continue to do the same thing four times until it's all folded over. And then once it's all folded over, again with a wet hand, pick the whole thing up and flip it over completely. So it's still kind of soft at this point, but what this is going to do is build these gluten strands, and this is really going to allow this bread to have some great structure. And I'm gonna go ahead and do this two more times, 30 minutes from now and an hour from now. I won't bore you guys with the same commentary on that. So the next time I speak to you guys, we'll be ready to dump this out, divide it, shape it, and put it into its proofing basket. Well, it's been about an hour and a half since we put the last fold on to our dough. So it's had plenty of time to rise. It's about tripled in size now. The structure is really nice because we haven't been messing with it. And at this point, what we want to do is divide this dough into two and shape it into the boules. So I'm working with a floured surface here. Got some flour on my hands, and I'm gonna turn this out of the bucket. I let it kind of fall out, and then I wanna pick it up with floured hands and let it lay as naturally as possible. And this will allow for me to try and divide it in half as evenly as possible. I'm just using a bench knife or a dough scraper to cut these in half. I'm gonna make sure that I have some flour under these so they move all right. And then what I'm gonna do is shape these into a round boule. So I'm gonna take one side, lift it up, much like I did with the fold, and move it to the other side. Rotate 90 degrees, so we do this four times, and fold to the other side and press down. Gently, gently. All right, at this point, I'm gonna flip this over and move it to a slightly less floured surface. I'm gonna cut my hands on the opposite side from me and move the whole thing toward me to pull it tight. And I'm just gonna rotate this in a circular motion and continue to pull it until it's slightly tightened. All right, so we have a nice round shape now, and I'm gonna transfer this to our cane baskets. And if you don't have a cane basket, you can use just a bowl that's round, a little bit bigger than these boules, and put a floured cloth or linen inside. So seam side down into the basket, cover this with a towel. I'm gonna repeat it with the other one, and then we're gonna give this about an hour for this to rise, and it'll be ready to go on. All right, while we give these things some time to rise, I'm gonna run outside and fire up our wood-fired oven. Well, out here at the wood-fired oven, we're gonna go ahead and get our fire built on the deck of the oven itself, just laying in some cherry wood, using this pyramid method to get this thing going. I'm gonna use cherry wood today because, well, one, it smells awesome, but it doesn't burn quite as hot as, say, like oak or hickory or something like that. And we are gonna be cooking at slightly lower temperatures for an oven like this. I've got my fire starter in here, so I'm just gonna get this thing going with the torch, help it along a little bit. But we wanna be cooking at about 475 degrees, which doesn't seem low for a home oven for sure, although you can totally do this in your home oven at 475. But for a wood-fired oven like this, we often fire this thing up to 800 degrees so that we can cook pizzas in just a matter of minutes. All right, we'll let this fire get going, and then I'm gonna move it to the side. And that way the deck will be nice and hot, but our flame will be off to the side and give us some room to do some baking.
So most of you aren't going to have a wood-fired oven at home, so we want to break down how you can make this bread in your charcoal or gas grill. If you have a pellet grill, you really don't need to do anything. Just set the temperature and bake like you always would.
On a gas grill, this is actually fairly simple. If your burners run front to back on your grill, simply turn on the outside burners if you have three or more, or just one if it's a small two-burner grill, and you will bake the bread over the indirect side where no heat is going to be coming up directly below the Dutch oven you are using to bake the bread in. Gas grills will hold temp well, and this gives you a chance to bake bread in the summer without heating up the entire house with your indoor oven.
On a charcoal grill, you will start a large charcoal fire under one half of your grill's grate. Adjusting airflow is needed to maintain a steady temperature. You will again simply be baking the bread over the indirect heat with no coals directly below the Dutch oven. Both techniques, as you can tell, are simple and take very little time to master. Now, let's bake our bread.
Our oven's sitting right at 475, which is perfect. We got some beautiful hot coals in here. I might just throw another chunk of wood on there since we're going to be opening this up and moving things around. Now, the other thing I did when I moved the fire to the side of this oven is I put in here a cast iron skillet to preheat. Now, in this wood-fired oven, I could definitely cook right on the deck itself. But the recipe that we want to give you today allows you to do this at home in your oven using a Dutch oven, a cast iron Dutch oven. And that's going to give you a really nice crust on your bread. So I'm taking the cast iron inside now. And when we get this cast iron inside, I'm gonna set it on my hot pad and we're gonna turn out the dough onto the surface of the cast iron. Now, if you remember, we put the seam side down in our basket, and that seam side is actually going to be the top of the loaf as we cook it. So I'm gonna turn this out onto my hand and then very carefully, without touching the cast iron, place it right in the center of this Dutch oven. All right, at this point, I'm going to leave it uncovered to start the bake. And then once the top gets nice and brown, we'll cover it with a lid. I'm placing my Dutch oven on a rack inside this wood-fired oven. Of course, you won't have to worry about that at home because you have a rack inside your oven. Now, we'll be back in about 10 to 15 minutes to check on the bread. All right, 15 minutes in. Really nice color on the top of this bowl. I'm going to cover it up. Let's check out the bottom while we're at it. Needs a little more color on the bottom. So we're going to put our lid on top of our Dutch oven, slide this back in, and let it finish cooking for another 10 minutes or so. Our 10-minute wait is up. Let's check out the bottom of this bread. Oh yeah, nice and crusty. All right, this thing is ready to come off. At this point, you just want to let this rest for a little bit. And cool little story, at Ken's Artisan Bakery, when their boules would come out and we'd set them on these wire racks, which is what you want to do with this to let it cool, you can just hear all of this crackling going on. It's the surface kind of settling in and there's all these little cracks. It's like the bread's talking to you. You know, once this thing's cooled down, it's ready to slice and consume. And I think you'll be really surprised at the quality of the bread that you can create just like this at home in your oven.
That does it for this episode. Let us know if you bake this bread recipe. We'd love for some of you to try it and let us know what you think. Also, email us at cookingwithfirepodcast@gmail.com to let us know what else you'd like us to feature on the podcast.
And as always, visit kmuw.org to get the full recipe for this week's cook.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to iTunes and leave us a review. This allows us to reach more listeners. And join us next time when Chef Tom bakes a cake on our Kamado grill.